What I want to share with you today, okay, I can start the clock now. Okay, we're good? We're good. Okay. I really appreciate the elders and Steve the opportunity to speak. You know, usually when I come and get to talk about the camp, I get a few minutes and I'm grateful for it. It's the grace of God that lets me stand up here and be able to address you and share some things today with you. I'm not going to share anything new. It's not going to be revelational. But it is going to rock the foundation of what you believe. Because sometimes you just got to go back and check out the foundation. Jennifer and I, last week, we began the process of selling our home. We've been talking about it. Yes, we're moving to Africa. No, I'm just kidding. No, we're not. No. We were invited, but we turned it down. No, we just feel like, you know, our kids are older. We feel like we've got to make some moves. And you'll understand a little bit. We've got some medical bills. We've got to lower our kind of our footprint, if you understand what I'm saying. And I got to figure some things out. So we've decided it's a great time where we live. We're going to sell our home and, I don't know, move to a smaller place. You know how that goes. And I'm like, sell my home. Do I have the energy to do this? Anyway. But the one thing you have to do is you got to go underneath your home and you got to start checking everything out. Make sure the foundation's good. Make sure there's no mold underneath there. You know, you make. And I think every once in a while, spiritually, we just have to do that. And so again, I'm not going to rock your world with some insight. But I want you to think about your fundamental beliefs in God today. Now, how many of you have experienced pain? I'm just looking around because I'm either going to see you raise your hand or you're a liar. All right. Pain, discomfort, anxiety, stress, frustration, confusion. These are a part of human existence. And we would all love to not experience them, especially in our society. That's why we medicate. And I'm not just talking about medicines. I'm talking about that's why we go to sporting events. That's why we get lost in this. That's why we sit in front of video games. That's why we find professional ways, meaning counseling and things, so that we can deal with our suffering. There's so many ways that we try to help our pain. Now, how many of you, if you could eat something and make that pain go away, would eat it? Well, of course you would. You see, I just proved my point. Nobody wants pain. Pain, I define it as anything that causes a discomfort. It could be the smallest of things, could be the most trivial things, or it could be the most tragic of events. But we all share that in common. And that's what I want to talk about today, because I have a recipe for peace for you. If I had to title my sermon, it would be a recipe of peace for the feast of faith. And I've got three ingredients that I want to share with you that we're going to mix together. And at the end, we're going to have something that you can eat and experience peace. Because you see, a painless life is a myth. It's a myth. But a peaceful life is a promise. And it's all in the scriptures. Turn to Hebrews chapter 11. We'll get there in just a few minutes. Jennifer and I are in pain. And I'd like to share that with you because I think by sharing a little bit of my story, a little bit of things that are going on in our life in the last few years, I believe this recipe will make much more sense. It'll taste much more savory to you. Okay, I hope I get this boom. Do I have to turn it on? Hey, there we go. Okay, so let me introduce you to some people that are very important to me. These are my children. On the left is Samantha, born in 1993. On the right is Nicholas, born in 1996. And I have a rich man's family. That's what my grandmother calls my family because, you know, a rich man has one of everything. So I have a boy and a girl. So I have a rich man's family. Now, beyond that, that's where it stops. Anyway. But they are Jennifer and mine's pride and joy, just like I would imagine your children are to you. or your grandchildren. And they both became Christians around 15, 16. Samantha is 16 years old. They've had a chance to travel with us. Thanks a lot to their grandparents. They've helped raise money. This is actually a picture in South Africa. Nicholas became a Christian when he was around 15, almost 16. And I love him. Now, you have to understand one thing about the order there. Samantha's the oldest because I willed that. Right, let me explain that. I've always wanted a girl. Always. I can't remember a time when I didn't want a girl. Why? Because I wanted to spoil her. Okay? I wanted to have my little princess. And we went to, and we found out we were pregnant, and you know, you get at that point where you're going to go and do the, what is that thing called? Sonogram? Yeah, yeah. Ultrasound. Yeah. That thing with the goo and the, anyway. All right. So we go there, and I'm like, I don't even go in. I mean, I'm just like, it's a girl. Just go verify it. I didn't go in. I sat outside a few minutes later. I was like, I don't know if I copped an attitude or I was like, well, I'll show you. I mean, I don't know. I just like go, and sure enough, all that. And then out, it's a girl. I was like, come on, let's go home. I told you. And so we had already talked about names and I just couldn't wait. And then, of course, we had Nicholas. And then I thought, man, how cool. And I at one time wanted four or five. The longer I had two, Lord have mercy, no more. All right. But I'm so grateful for who they are. And this is us. This is my in-laws. Again, they're so generous. They saved up for years on their 50th anniversary, and they took us to Greece. My family, my wife's brother's family, like 12 of us, they paid for it all. Yes, marry well, guys, marry well. Marry well. And what a beautiful picture. It was the island of Santorini. It was just amazingly beautiful. But this picture is more beautiful to me. I mean, this is, oh my gosh, look at that. That lady on the right is Jennifer, for those of you who don't know. Woo-hoo, yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm back again. Sorry. Oh, wow. And Samantha looking mighty, mighty pretty there. I don't know, so cute. And then Nick. All right, yeah, don't tell him I said that. Okay. No, you can tell him. Now, some interesting things have happened. And by the way, I'm going to share some things, and I have talked with my children, I've talked with our whole family, and what I'm going to share with you is not sharing secrets of our family. Everybody's okay with me talking about this. I've cleared this first. 2013, Samantha started having some mental health issues. And four times that year, she tried to kill herself. And so we were in and out of hospitals. We were in and out of therapy. And this is in between one of those times. I actually went up to visit my parents and took her with me because I just thought, we just need to get away a little bit. And I just wanted to dote on her and tell her how much I loved her. And this was at a park, and I didn't know this was being taken at the time. My mom took this picture. And it just captured, it tells a story to me. She looks relaxed, and we're just walking and just sharing a moment. I couldn't tell you what we were talking about. I don't even know if we were talking. I can't. All I know is that's precious to me. And about a year later, this was 2013, about a year later, 2014, Samantha came to us. And we now found out that, you know, bipolar was having a severe depression. But she's also having a lot of thoughts about same-sex attraction. And she came to us and told us, she says, I believe that mom and dad. I didn't react that well at first. My first reaction, guys, don't do this. If this happened, dads, if this happens in your household, my first reaction, well, I wish you would have told me you're pregnant. To my shame. Now, we've since talked that through, and I've apologized. But it's not in the script that I wrote. It's not supposed to turn out like that. That's a little too real for me. Let me help someone else's kid with that, but not mine. Maybe you can relate, or you have some of these kind of thoughts. I don't know. Or maybe you have just the fears of those thoughts. Well, this is her and I at our last daddy-daughter retreat. Yes, that's me getting my groove on. I think what I am is looking, I'm going to hurt that tomorrow. Oh my gosh. The song was Single Ladies. Okay? And I love it. It's one of my favorite pictures. Look at that look on her. Man, Sam's face. It's alive. It's just happy. And I mean, we were just having such a blast, the last daddy-daughter. Well, summer of July 2015, Sam leaves us a long letter. And she tells us that she now is going to transition because she wants to be a male. And she has now legally changed her name. She's taking hormones. She's not even sure if she believes in God anymore. She does believe that there's a high being, but she's not sure about all that. And I'm introduced to a crowd that I never thought I'd be introduced with outside of maybe sharing my faith or meeting through someone else. And I thought I knew what unconditional love was. I'm learning. But I'm hurting. Because I miss my little girl. This was Thanksgiving last year. And that is my two sons, Alexander, Nicholas, and then Alexander Eli. Now you and I can get into a conversation about whether you agree with me about calling her son or not. I need to speak to you, one, as a father, I'm her dad. I also am speaking to you as a camp director and what I believe in my convictions as a man of God. And we've had this discussion. And what I'm having to learn is, I'm having to learn with the deal with a pain that I thought my saddest days were over. Somebody had told me, yeah, you've lost a few LBs. I said, yeah, if you would have saw me this time last year, I gained weight. I actually was this far from resigning from the camp. I was sad. I would find myself in my kitchen curled up in a ball crying. Because I missed. One day I just woke up. I couldn't go to church. So I got all of Sam's pictures all over the house and I put them in front of me and I just wept. Because I missed my little girl. And yet I'm trying to find out what normal is now. I'm trying to understand what does God loved me when I was an enemy of His. He loved me when I wasn't doing the things, making the choices that honor Him. He loves me. So how do I do that? And that's the stage that I'm at. And we're all trying to figure out normal. And Alexander, Sam, I struggle with my pronouns all the time. I have to consciously remember the name. It's the most intentional thing I've ever had to do. And she wants a relationship with me, with us, Jennifer and I. In fact, some of her friends, they all know we're kind of religious, you know. That's how they term it. You know, your parents are kind of religious. And they told her, they said, you should just get rid of your parents. And you know what? She said, no way. I hit the parent lottery. So we're all trying to figure out what's normal. Now, you could stand up here and tell your story about your pain. Maybe it wouldn't be as painful. Maybe it'd be more painful than mine. But it's your story. It's your pain. And so for the last 2 years, I've had to really wrestle with some foundational things. And that's what I want to share with you with this as the backdrop. I'm not there. I am on my way. Not perfect. I'm making progress, though. I'm at least 18 months later able to stand up and talk about it without crying. And I'm more spiritual than I've ever been in my life. I'm learning more and I'm alive than I've ever been in my life. Maybe except for the first few months of being baptized, because there's nothing like that. I mean, I'm figuring out Jesus. I'm understanding unconditional love. You know, I got the tray this morning, the communion tray, and right when it was Jessica handed it to me, there was one cup left. And I was like, that is so symbolic, God. I just make it. Whew. Thank you. There's just enough grace for me. Thank you. I'm in the room. There might have been a time when I would have went, why? Well, what would have happened then? Huh? I didn't think about me. You see? And so I want to share with you just thoughts with this backdrop. Hebrews 11. This recipe, like I said, three ingredients. The first ingredient is this. God is real. He's real. And of course, yeah, we're in church. Sure, he's real. That's like, wait a minute, that is the most basic foundation. But I'm telling you, things will happen, if they've not already happened in your life, that will challenge that. Do you know how many days I've sat there and gone, I don't believe this. God, now, I can't remember a day in my life when God wasn't real. Honestly, I can't. I cannot remember when I didn't believe in God. My first Jesus moment was at 5 years old. Come to camp, I share that story at the cross study most of the time, okay? But I just grew up believing. I didn't always act and make choices and obey on that belief, but I cannot think of a time. And yet this has rocked my world as to whether or not God is real. And I've had to go back. Hebrews chapter 11. Verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. Jeff mentioned, you know, Elijah took off in a chariot. Well, here's the other guy that's in the Bible that didn't experience death. He could not be found. Why? Because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. You can't start without first believing that God exists, or having an inkling, or maybe something that moves you to think. And once you decide that, what good is it for you to show up, sit in these chairs, if you don't really believe in God? And I'm growing in my faith that pain and suffering and certain things that happen, even though we don't want it to happen, we want this easy life, give me money, I don't want to work, okay? We want all that, but it's there to make us think and question, do I really believe God is here? That's foundational. When the script isn't going the way you like it, maybe somebody said something to you, maybe something happened to you, man, I don't know, it's your pain. But is it strong enough to negate the reality and realness of God? That's for you to decide. And there are many times in our life, I believe more than we kind of want to admit, that times of doubt come in. Sometimes they're great, sometimes they're small. But thinking people should doubt is my opinion, because then you go look for answers and your faith is stronger. Now let me tell you about a situation in Cal State Fullerton. They did a huge survey across the United States, across denominations, across all cultures and races in our country, across ages. And they wanted to find out, why do kids around 18 leave the church, leave spirituality, leave religion? And so they asked people from when they were 90 down to, you know, down to 1920. And they came up with two amazing answers. The first one is, the kids did not have, as they were growing up, relationships with older people in the church. I'll just throw that out there, and Steve and the elders, you can figure that out and just go run with it. Okay? Maybe it's doing well. That's amazing to me. The second, more pertinent thing to what we're talking about, is that the church did not let them doubt. They would not let them explore the doubts that they have. Even though as an adult, they had their own. What do you mean you don't believe in God? You've been going to church since you were 3 years old. Right back there in the kingdom's kid. You don't believe in God? And we act like, really? Instead of saying, really, what are your doubts? Come on, let's explore them together. Let's journey. And what we do is we end up doubting the doubters instead of the doubts. And perhaps you're feeling like that even though you're long past teenagehood. But there's something going on, this pain or this suffering, what it is in your life is making you question. Great, talk with somebody. Tell God you doubt him. He ain't going nowhere. He is established, almighty, and true. And he's not going to run because little Jeffy has a doubt. Why he runs? No. In fact, I think he's just been waiting for me to go. I'm so glad you talked to me. Let me prove some things to you. Let me share some things with you. And I believe that is a role of the things that challenge us and the things that are not in our script. The second ingredient. By the way, I like to eat. Yeah, buddy, I like to eat. The hardest fast I ever do is when I have to cut out sweets. I crave them. I crave them so bad that underneath my fingernails hurts. It's the weirdest thing. And excuse for biting my fingernails. Anyway, no, I mean, it's serious. I crave, you know, pies, cobblers, sweet potato pie. Woo! Talk about it. Anyway, chocolate. If you don't like chocolate, you just check your pulse. You are just not human. And I love cake. I like muffins. I like cakey things, cookies, things with flour. And to me, cake, I don't know, you name it, it's got, I don't know, Twinkies. Those are nasty. Oreos, I don't know if that had flour, but it's got sugar in it. All right. The perfect cookie. Who wants to fry an Oreo? I mean, you just messed with perfection. Anyway, all right. I digress. But I look at the reality of God and his realness. It's like the flour in a cake recipe or a cobbler recipe. I mean, you won't have it if it's not there. It's a recipe that will fail. The second thing. I would like to introduce the second thing with a question. And please raise your hand if you agree with this statement. Or no, if your answer is, let me do it this way. If your answer is yes to this question, how many of you believe that God is sovereign, but he's not in control? He is sovereign, but he is not in control. Raise your hand if you say yes. Wow. Interesting. I'm raising a hand, by the way. I believe this. I believe God Almighty is sovereign, which means, let me define sovereign. Don't know if it's the Webster's definition, but I'll give you the Jeff definition, the Jeffster definition. It basically, God has the final say and the final choice on anything and everything, anywhere, anybody. Bottom line. He can choose to act. He could choose not to act. I don't believe he's always in control, though. Why? You're a parent. You make decisions, don't you? You're in control. When we stood in the garden, he said, "Do not eat from that tree." Boom. He gave up control right there because he allowed choice. And then those choices, every choice you've made since you were born, whether you're this age or age, all right? It doesn't matter. Has now defined your life. You are where you are because of the choices you made, because you're in control on this earth. That does not give up the sovereignty of God by any means. Because let me tell you something. If that were the case, then God just would have made us all robots and he would have programmed to love us. I think he gave his choice because that's the ultimate definition of love. Go look in, I think it's John, one of the small Johns. It says that love for God is obey, right? Okay, so, but what if he just programmed me? Oh, yes, I love God. I love God. I will do what you say, God. Yes, I'll love you. I bow to you. Is that choice? No, I don't know, some sort of code that's written in there that God writes. But instead, he gave us freedom. He gave us control. And to me, this is a fundamental ingredient to peace. Why? Because you see, there are choices that are made in life that we don't like, or that sometimes we choose even in our own lives, that end up causing pain, and then we end up blaming it on God. And I think sometimes we get a little lost there. Hebrews chapter 1. We live in a world where the choices people make can lead us to ask some interesting questions. And this choice in my family has led me to ask some interesting questions. Questions like this: why do bad things happen to good people? One time I walked into my teen ministry when Jennifer and I were leading the teens, and I think it was in Athens. I can't remember. I think it was in Athens, where we are now. And I said, we're going to talk about this topic, this question. So I said, let's analyze the question. First of all, break it down word by word. The word why. How many of you can answer the word why? Chirp, chirp, chirp. Yeah, good. That's way above our pay grade some many times. I had a good friend of mine tell me in a tragic situation, he said, instead of answering why don't you ask what can you do? Because you see, I have a lot more control over the what I can do. Why is a sovereign word. Why belongs in the realm of sovereignty. And there's lots of times I don't get why. Now maybe as time goes on, there's a why that surfaces. Or maybe I can see it, or God is gracious enough to let me see it. But otherwise, there's many times I think things happen in life that we could spend so much time. Why? Because we are not sovereign. And we cannot think like the sovereign. And so I said, great, let's throw that question out. So now we're down to bad things happen to good people. Great, let's talk about good and bad. How do you know what's good and bad? What subjective terms? One thing might happen and it might lead and cause something else. You get stopped at a red light. You're in a hurry. Next thing you know, you drive by an accident. Could have been you. Good and bad. I'm actually trying to take the words good and bad out of my language because I've really figured it out that they are pretty subjective. And it's typically through my own filters. And so I said, great, teens, we're going to throw those two words out. Now we're just down to things happen to people. Now we can deal with something. Things happen to people. And that's something we can get our minds around. But pain and suffering and things that happen in our life, they challenge us with these questions. Another question, is God dead? Where'd he go? God, are you there? Do you see what's happening with my little girl? Do you see what's happening to me? And go read Psalms. David cries all that a lot. And then he gets at the end of the psalm and he says, God, you are my refuge. Why? Because you're real and you're sovereign and you have it. You have everything good. Just let me hang on until either I understand or I get through it. But that's what happens with painful situations. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom also he made the universe. And it goes on, talks about his radiance. And I think if you're not careful, you're going to miss just a few, four or five words. He made the universe. I love stuff about the stars and the universe. It's my science side, as Jennifer calls it, my nerdy side. I was a chemistry major, and so I get into some of those things. I get into the big and the small, what happens on a molecular level, but also what happens on a grand scale. Do you understand that God is outside of our universe, and we are such a speck in this little thing? But he made the universe, put the stars in places exactly where they need to be, names them. Now get this. The whole universe is on a mathematical model. And we can tell where a star was 5,000 years ago, and we can tell where it's going to be 5,000 years from now. That's how they maneuver these space probes that go, and they know not to hit a star. Why? Because they know where they're going to be. The entire universe is on a mathematical model, and it operates. Kepler discovered that in 1700s. But we, now that we have technology and computers that can crunch numbers at huge amounts of time, we can now study the stars in a much different way. And do you realize that God had to create math in order to create the universe? Now, that might not seem so revelational, but think about this for a minute. It has to all work and fit, because there's a bunch of people out there that want to challenge the sovereignty of God and prove it's not true, and nobody's done it yet. And God said, okay, let me just think about this for about half a second. Let me come up with math. Boom, done. All right. Let me put the universe together. Boom, done. And he did it all in the size of an atom. You ever heard of people that draw things on a little grain of rice? Is that crazy or what? Can you imagine that? I'm like, I can't even hardly see the grain of rice. And you draw a whole story on a grain of rice? God put the universe together in an atom. And then he goes, boom! And 13 billion years later, here we are, and everything's in place. I mean, it's amazing. God is sovereign. You have to believe that even through your pain. Even when something you don't like. Your belief in His sovereignty is directly proportional to your trust in Him. It is a must ingredient for peace. Lastly, the last ingredient. Now, how many of you would eat cake without sugar? Oh, no, you wouldn't. No, ain't no way. Okay, unless you're a diabetic. Like, my dad's a diabetic, so he eats that fake sugar. But he still wants his sweet. There might be one or two of us. Most of us, you know what? We want sugar in our cake and our cobbler and our sweet potato pie. You imagine sweet potato pie without sugar? Anyway. Can you imagine an Oreo? You know what it would be? It would just be these two flat pieces of nothing. Anyway, all right. This last ingredient is the sugar. It's what makes this whole thing taste good and makes us want to swallow it. Mark chapter 10. Verse 17, this is a story that, golly, we know it so well. Mark 10, verse 17. As Jesus started on his way, a man ran up to him and fell on his knees before him. Pretty earnest guy here, I would say. Good teacher, he asked. What must I do to inherit eternal life? Why do you call me good? Jesus answered. No one is good except God alone. Now, picture the scene. This guy runs up and, please teach me how to go to heaven. Could you imagine you go to the store this afternoon and you walk in, you're just there for to get a little half and half for your coffee, you know, and you walk in and then all of a sudden somebody runs up in the aisle and goes, Jeff, please, Tony, please, I need to go to heaven. What would you do? Oh, man, but sit down. I brought my Bible right here. I got it. Sit down. We start to, here's the word. Let me teach you about what it means to follow Jesus. Here's the grace of God. Man, we'd have it all. We're ready, right? Uh-huh. What does Jesus do? He gets stuck on a word. He said, whoa, time out here. I'm not, okay, you want to go to heaven? Fine. First of all, we need to correct something. Why do you call me good? Do you realize there's only one being in all of this universe that I made that is good? And that's God alone. God alone. Dios solo. God alone. Now, I went and looked that word up, you know, like all of us scholars do. We have to look at the words and everything. That word is agathon in the Greek, and it means incorruptibly good. It cannot be anything but. By nature, it can't even force itself to be ungood, bad, not good. It, to its core, just good. You see, this final ingredient, the sugar that makes it so sweet, is that God is good. In everything that happens in your life and in my life, whether I like it or not, God is good. And you see, pain is like a virus that kills our conception and belief that God is good. Well, this is happening to me. God can't be good. He's just ignoring me. He must not like me. It took me a long time to get out of the old punishment complex where I thought when something bad happened, I thought God was punishing me. And I wrestled with this I wrestled so much. I went back and I pulled out cards. I pulled out my calendar. I tried to look in my calendar to say, did I take Sam on enough dates? Did I tell her she was pretty enough? Did I mess up? What did I do wrong? And then I couldn't figure anything out, and I started thinking, well, God, you did something wrong. I did pretty good here. Got advice. I wasn't a bad dad. So you must have messed up. Well, it didn't take me long to kind of get convicted about that until I read this. And I was like, wow, God, you are, only you are good. Now, I believe he did that. And this whole story, and the reason he stopped this young ruler is because he wanted to standardize goodness for us. When we lose the belief, regardless of what happens in our life, that God is good, we are on a path that is not going to end well. We're going to be bitter, angry. At the least, we might make it to heaven, but barely, scorching behind. You know what I'm saying? Barely. And we're not going to live the life that's faithful and productive and happy and joyful. I'm experiencing a lot of pain with this situation. But believe you me, it does not negate the goodness of my God. Now, anytime you do a new recipe, right, you got to invite somebody over. Or you try it on your husband, or your wife, or, you know, your kid. Actually, your kids. Come on in here and try this out. No, you invite somebody over and you say, I'm going to fix something new. And so we put these ingredients together. God is real. You know, that flour. All right, there we go. And then we throw in a little bit of sovereignty. Then we start mixing. And then we add the goodness of God. And now we put it in the oven of life. And let it bake. And now we're going to taste it. We're going to test this new recipe. So let's test this recipe. First of all, if God is not real, why are we here? Man, you could be spending your time a lot of other places. Maybe even you're thinking that now. I would really be quiet because well, then challenge if you think God is real. Because if he's not real, fine, go live your life. Let me know how that works out for you. Have fun. Report back later. So I'm pretty sure that the reality of God needs to be in there. Now, what if God is real and he's good, but he's not sovereign? Think of how that would turn out. Oh, my goodness. I'm worshiping an inferior God. I'm worshiping an idol. That's what idols are. That little idol ain't done nothing to nobody. And we bow down to it, and that car, it gets me everywhere. And we wash it, and it makes me look good. I'm profiling down the road. Anyway. But you know what? It's not sovereign. You can't pray to it and expect anything to happen. It runs out of gas. You got to fix it eventually. Spend lots of money on it. Anyway. Okay, so we know that. But what if God is real and he's sovereign, but he's not good? Ay, ay, ay. As they say in South Africa, ay. We actually had a guy in history not too long ago that was like this. Had a little funny mustache. Thought he's real. Thought he was sovereign. He was not good. We see how that turned out. So all three of these have to make sense. They have to work together. But they have to be baked in your life. And that's where pain, suffering, that's where the things we don't like come into play. I'm going to close you with a story that I think is appropriate. Because I had to go find some biblical heroes that I could latch onto. And I'm still having to do it. Again, a very familiar story, Abraham and Isaac, right? God says, hey, yeah, I want to test you. I kind of want to know what you're made of. I want to see what your love is like. He says, go kill Isaac. He's your only son. And you had him when you were 100 years old. That's a long time to wait for a child. You weren't sure you're going to have one. Lord, I don't want a child 100 years old. Anyway, but here, I'm not even sure I want to live to 100 years old. I think I'll take 85 and die quietly. Anyway, all right. I just look at this, though, and you finally got a child, your son, and that was a huge deal, the heir. And God, you what? You want me to go kill him? And so what does he do? He packs up his donkeys and his servants and brings Isaac, and they go and they travel for 3 days. Can you imagine what those 3 days were like for him? A starlight devotional did he have? What did he do in wrestling with God, the realness of God? Well, I know God told me this. He's real. Okay, but Lord, okay, sovereign. Okay, good, no way. He's telling me to kill my son? I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us. It kind of makes it sound like it was just nothing to Abraham. Oh, okay, sure, I'll go kill him. No, I think he had to work. In fact, Romans talks about he had to get to the point where he could believe that God could raise the dead. So he had to work his faith. And you see, we've got to work through our pain and suffering in moments that we don't like. We've got to do it in faith. Because here's what the Bible said. This happened to me. That picture right there, I've left it up there the whole time. That picture right there was Thanksgiving morning. That morning, I woke up 4 o'clock in the morning. I just couldn't sleep, and I started reading. And I read about Abraham. And this is what he says. Abraham told his servants when they got to the place where he was going to sacrifice Isaac. He said, stay here. Me and the boy, we are going to go over here and worship, and then we will return. I jumped out of my bed. We're at the beach with all of our family. I jumped out of my bed, and I felt so convicted. I was like, what? I can worship through pain and through things that I don't like or even want? And maybe all my worship is just obeying. Just learning to unconditionally love. Learning to accept people where they are. Learning to validate them because of their choices. And the hardest thing, just because I call him now Alexander, doesn't mean I condone anything about that. But because we do a lot of things that God still loves us and doesn't condone. So I'm learning to be like God like never before. And now I'm trying to reason. I'm trying to think. We will go over here and worship. I'm in the worship stage. I'm having to learn to worship through utter pain and sadness. And you know what? There will come a day, and I hope it is. For you see, I have Samantha's Bible right here. It says Samantha Rorb on it. I hope one day we're back on this stage. I don't know when, but I pray it's in my lifetime. Because Samantha will come back, be resurrected, and we will tell our story here and all over the world. I'm not all the way there yet, so pray for my faith. Now, I'm not sure what pain you're experiencing. Or I'm not sure what pain you will experience, but you will experience pain. But here's what I want you to do. I even wrote it down. Set your mind steadfastly on the fact that God is real, He is sovereign, and He is good. My prayer is that this will sustain you in your time of need as it has mine. May it lead you to choices of faith as it is for me. Thank you.